How many recognize this magazine? Most of you should. The Discern magazine. How many remember this particular issue? The cover on it? All right. For those of you who don't, or for those of you who may have forgotten, on the first page we have a, it's consider this. It's every month they, or every time they have the issue, they have a section here called Consider This. It's written by Mr. Kylo. And I wanted to read the last two paragraphs of the article entitled Getting Back to the Right Family Tree. He says, because family is so important to God, so critical for society's stability, and determines so much of our happiness and success, Discern consistently features articles on God's instructions for healthy marriages and families. We can't get our families back to the garden, but we can get our families back to God, to knowing Him as our Father, to learning His principles of living. We can get them to the family tree that we need, the tree of life. So in the sermon today, I want to talk about our responsibility to teach the next generation of God's church. Some of you were here and heard a sermon I gave a year ago. Some of you were not. Some of you were here, but forgotten it. It was exactly a year ago I spoke on this subject, and in that sermon I made a commitment to you that I would work towards bringing the generations together so that the older generation would have opportunity to teach the younger. You may remember on that Sabbath we had a very special Bible study. We had our older folks talking with the teens of the church, asking questions of each other. It's time to revisit that commitment. Review again why it's so important. There is a prophecy concerning end times and concerning the responsibility to strengthen families. And yes, there's our theme. And we've already sung about it in Malachi 4 and verse 5, where we read, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse. And some may say, well, I don't have to do anything there about teaching my children, because we've got in some way a person, an entity, something in the form of Elijah the prophet. He's going to do it. So therefore, I don't have to do anything. Well, I think we know better than that, but we've heard the scripture before. We have perhaps analyzed it and tried to apply it. But apparently God wants us to pay very close attention to what this is saying, because it does say that if we don't do this, this is lest, if this is not done, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse or with utter destruction. Well, we're not expecting that, are we? We're expecting Jesus Christ to come in power and glory, Lord of lords, King of kings, set up the world tomorrow, the government of God. That's what we're expecting. We're not expecting a curse. So apparently something's going to happen that gets the families right, the hearts of the fathers to the children, the hearts of the children to their fathers, because God is not going to strike us with utter destruction. Now, we might not understand everything in detail about this prophecy, but I think we can gather that God does expect us to proactively strengthen our families to the extent that we can. Couple of obvious things. It's obvious we love our families. We have strong families in the church for the most part. Our parents love their children. The children love their parents. So what I'm asking today is, how can we take this to a higher level? How can we improve? How can we grow? How can we apply this principle not only to families who have children, but to everyone here? I don't want to leave anybody out today. This sermon is for everyone, whether you have children or not. We know we are to teach our children the next generation. How? Why? What's the best way? What do we do to help guarantee that we'll be successful? There's been a lot of unsuccessful parenting over the years. Well, do we just let them come, absorb things on their own, and then when they're 16, 17, 18, they just make their own choices? Now, that's fine. You made your choice. That's fine. How do we influence that choice. I think, as we've already read in Malachi 4, 5, God's already given us a foundational approach. He did? Well, what was that? Because he said, turn. Turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the children to their fathers. You know what? That involves action. There's something going on there. Because we're told to turn children to the fathers, implying, therefore, that the fathers are living in such a way that we want them to turn to. And this also implies that children would naturally go a different way. And we have to intervene, we have to help them to choose not to go the natural way, but turn them to the way of the father, or the parents. So it takes action on our part. We have to be involved in teaching them, and helping them, motivating them to turn towards the way of the parents and therefore the way of God. Now, the church does not take away teaching from the parents. We feel that is parent responsibility. You know, we don't just come to church and say, well, they're getting all the education that they need just by coming to church. No, we can't do that. Parents should teach their children God's way of life. We're to become godly families. We simply need to get started or continue reinforcing that if we already have. Now, in this Discern magazine, I think it's in this particular issue, one of our pastors, Mr. Bruce Gore, he actually pastors down in Atlanta, and a couple other churches down in the Georgia area. Mr. Bruce Gore wrote about the importance of creating the right environment to raise our children. What he said, I thought, was so important, I wanted to share it with you today. He wrote this: Indiana is beautiful in the summer. Some of us here know about Indiana, don't they? Yeah. I know about Ohio. But in the dead of winter, it can be a cold, dreary place. Very few evergreens exist to provide color. And when no snow falls, the landscape is a dull gray. So on one of these cloudy days, my wife and I visited a couple who owned a nursery farm. We stepped from our car into the cold north wind, made our way over to some long buildings. And as we stepped through the doors, we were welcomed by a pleasant 72-degree temperature, met with rows and rows of beautiful flowers and many varieties of verdant young vegetable plants. No matter how cold, snowy, and windy it was outside, inside those buildings, we found the ideal environment in which plants could thrive. If we create the right environment, we can grow almost anything that we want to. I think you're catching on to the point, aren't you? The analogy. He goes on to say the same is true for children. If we give them the right environment, they will develop the qualities they'll need for a great future. We can't totally insulate our children from all the negative things of this world, but we can create an environment in our homes, and I might add here, in our churches, where they can grow and where they can thrive. End of the quote. So let's start getting into the heart of the sermon by asking a few questions. I often do that as I start a sermon. First, questions in regards to our own children. How can we create the best environment possible for them? As this analogy just was bringing out, what can we do to create that best environment for them to grow and to thrive in the church of God? Hopefully on their journey towards the kingdom of God. We're going to talk about creating an environment. How do we do that? What's the best way? Have we taught already, or are teaching our children, the important lessons of the Bible? Do they know? Do they know who some of the Bible heroes were and why? I was talking to someone the other day saw a story of Daniel, and the movie was quite accurate in its portrayal of Daniel in the lion's den, for example. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Well, do they know those? How do you know if they know it? You know, do you study these things with them? Have you ever asked your children or child to defend one of the doctrines? Why don't we go to church on Sunday like everybody else? Why is it that we keep unleavened bread? Why don't we celebrate Easter? You know, all the different things. Have you ever asked them to defend the doctrines? Again, this is age specific, of course. Do they understand Bible prophecy in light of world events? You ever notice that world events are getting more scary every day? Your kids see that too. At least they hear about it. If they're in school, they'll know these things. And it can be a frightening place. Do your children understand Bible prophecy in light of what's going on in the world? Do they want to learn? Do they ask questions of you about what they hear and what they see? Do they enjoy studying about the things of God, or is it considered a chore that they have to do because you told them to? Now, you may not know the answer to all those questions. Again, that's something you might be able to talk with your kids about at home. How can we make learning of God something enjoyable? They want to do it. Okay? It's not, oh, I have to. This is, Dad told me I gotta read the Bible. They want to do it. I'm gonna quote several times from various articles and publications that we have because I think that some of the words are said much better than I can. This is from Life, Hope, and Truth. He writes, one of the first things we need to do in helping our children build a relationship with God is to begin talking about God when they first begin to comprehend. Of course, now this certainly applies to if we've got little ones. You know, if we haven't, then we start where we can. Again, age appropriate. But as they're very little, point out how God created food or the plants in your yard or how God created a sunrise and sunset. As they mature, explain God's instructions on how to live. In Deuteronomy, we find instructions to God about, instructions to talk to God. Sorry. In Deuteronomy, we find instructions to talk about God's way when we sit in our house, when we walk, when we lie down, when we rise up. And that pretty much covers all the activities of the day. Point is that wherever we are, whatever we're doing, we need to take the opportunity to talk to our children about God and about how His laws benefit us. This should be a natural part of our conversation, born from a deep and abiding relationship that we ourselves have built with God and that we are maintaining. So tell your children about the wonderful blessings that He's given them and you by placing you together in a family. And not only in your physical family, but this family, our church family. Help your children see the blessing that God has given them to be a part of a family. I might add here, that's the end of the quote, I might add that you should help your children understand how special their calling is. You know, we talk about that and we understand our calling, how so few have the precious opportunity that we've been given to understand who God is, what He's doing here, what His plan is. I really like the theme of the youth camp this year. The theme was the pearl of great price. Find it, keep it. Why? Why did they have that theme? Well, the goal was to help our children realize just how rare the opportunity is and how precious the pearl is that God has given us, that He's made available to us. He's placed it right before us. We should appreciate it, make the most of it. Let's continue just a little bit more from Life, Hope, and Truth. Another way to talk to your children about God's blessings is to point out situations where God has intervened in your life or the lives of others. I know we have opportunity to do that. In fact, that may be a Bible study coming up before too long, where we can talk about how God has intervened miraculously in some cases in our lives. Going on, He cares very deeply about each one of us, and He does intervene in our lives. Well, do your children know whenever God's intervened in your life? Can they tell of an opportunity or something that's happened? There's an adage that says, don't judge a book by its cover. But the truth is, we as humans do judge a book or a person or an organization or a way of life by what we see. And you know, our children will do the exact same thing. If parents are hypocritical, unethical, immoral, or even just simply lazy in their approach to obedience to God, their children are going to be the first to know it. And not only will they know, but it will taint their approach to God. You know what that's telling you? We've got to be very genuine in what we see. We cannot be hypocritical about our beliefs and our convictions of our beliefs. None of us would want to be that type of an example to our children. So as we seek to be the right influence on our children as parents or as members of the congregation as a whole, we need to be aware that our children do see us. They do watch. They observe. So we must be genuine. Okay? They'll spot a fake. There's an important principle that we're going to cover in Psalm 127 and verse 3. I'm just going to read the one verse there. In Psalm 127, verse 3. It tells us that children are an inheritance of the Lord. A heritage. That's an incredibly important statement. Our children are very precious to us. They're vital to our future. If none of us had children, for long, the human race would die out, obviously. So I think that concept is vital to understand in the context of the sermon today. Inheritance, a heritage. Why are we talking about this? Well, let's consider the word, inheritance. And let's consider, I mentioned Mr. Armstrong, and I mentioned that today is 30 years now since he's been dead. And he was a very old man when he died. Members of the church who are my age, 61, who are my age and older, are here now because of the work that was done primarily through Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong and the team that surrounded him. We responded to God's calling through hearing him on the radio. The world tomorrow, Ambassador College presents, you know, and you remember how it went, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow, and greeting friends around the room. It was just part of our culture. It's what we, many of us, grew up on. Our parents heard that. Maybe we heard it. Read the Plain Truth magazine. Most of my age group and older are what we call first generation Christians because you came into the church because you heard that message. You heard it on the radio. You picked up a magazine. Somehow you came into the knowledge of your truth, most of you, older ones, on your own, and not through the teaching and the influence of your parents. Personally, I was 12 years old in 1966. So I came in through my parents, consider myself then to be a second generation Christian. So what am I saying? I'm saying that I inherited the truth from my parents, right? So Nancy and I have two children. They inherited the truth from us. We have six grandchildren. They are inheriting the truth from their parents. So they are now fourth generation Christians. Our grandson is 20 years old now. Maybe not too many more years till hopefully there's a fifth generation in the Kelly family. You see, I think that's what God intended. Psalm 103, a couple of verses here. An inheritance of the Lord. Verse 17, Psalm 103. But the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting. You talk about a long time. God's mercy. On those who fear him and his righteousness to children's children, children's children's children, yeah. To such as keep his covenant. So there's something to be done. And to those who remember his commandments to do them. So we can't just know them. We have to do them. This cycle is something that should continue from generation to generation to generation. And so we need to work towards increasing the times that that actually happens, that the cycle doesn't stop. Our children should have a desire to accept this inheritance. They should want it. They should not run from it. They should run to it. How do we help them have that desire? How do we help them want it? That's what we're trying to address in the sermon today. That's the core of what we're talking about. But the bottom line answer to that is, this way of life, God's way of life, has to become more attractive to our young people than what the world has to offer. They have to desire this. It looks better. This is more to be desired than what the world has to offer. And I believe that not only parents, but I believe the entire congregation here can play a part in making that happen. Yes, we actually have a responsibility to make that happen. Again, being clear, the primary responsibility begins with the parents, but there's certainly something that we all can do. Deuteronomy chapter 4. A couple of primary scriptures about our responsibility to teach our children. Not new, if you have children especially, you've heard these before. And as we read this, let's substitute maybe the concept of what great nation is there that has this way of life. Let's talk about the church, spiritual Israel. Verse 8, what great nation there, but in our case, church, that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in this law which I have set before you this day. Only take heed to yourself. Diligently keep yourself, lest you forget. You see, we have such a proclivity to forget. So we're told to take heed and do it diligently. The laws of God, the ways of God, lest we forget the things that our eyes have seen. What have our eyes seen? Well, we got to go back and we rehearse that and we think about it. You ever wonder why it is that we keep the holy days, the cycle, every year? It's not, well, we do the cycle every 2 years or every 3 years. Lest we forget, we do it every year. God's got something in mind. He's teaching us. Lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart. You see, you got to put them in your heart if they're going to depart from it in the first place. So let's put these things in our heart, not just in the head. Teach them to your children. Teach them to your grandchildren. Especially concerning the day you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb, when the Lord said, gather the people to me and I will let them hear my words. You remember when that the law was given at Mount Sinai? Go back and read that occasion, how the ground shook and the earthquakes and the lightnings and the thunder and the display of God's power. The people were so afraid. They said, no, we're afraid. Moses, you speak to us. What was that like? Don't forget. How's God worked with us? When the Lord said, gather the people to me and I will let them hear my words so that they may learn to fear me all the days that they live on the earth and that they may teach their children. Again, our responsibility. Chapter 6, verse 6. We've got essentially the same thing. These words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You know, again, that's a command. They have to be in our heart. We can't just, well, I know that. No, it's internalized. It means something. You then shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in the house and walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. Do we do it? We know it. But do we do this? It takes diligence. Again, not all of us here have children or grandchildren. Do others of us here have any responsibility in regards to the youth of the church? Again, let's rehearse. The primary role is to assist parents. That's the primary role of the church. That's the primary role of any of us who are not the parents. Our job is to help, to assist the parents. Two questions. Are we participating in that? And do the parents and the children welcome that assistance and take advantage of it when it's offered? Go to Psalm 34. I'm going to review a scripture that we covered in the sermon a year ago. I didn't remember it. I suspect you don't either. It's very appropriate, though, to what we're talking about. King David was a pretty smart guy, a man after God's own heart. And he loved children, and he had some instruction for children. And this is being said to us as well. Psalm 34, verse 11. It says, "Come, you children, listen to me." He was the king. You know, he had authority. He had a command performance, if you will. But he's asking them, "Come and listen, and I will teach you the fear of the Lord." You know, that doesn't mean I'm going to teach you to be afraid of God. King David said, if you'll listen, I will teach you the most important principle, and that is the fear and the reverence of the Lord. And he begins to then know his audience, and he's appealing to the youth, as we should. And he asked the youth, would you like to enjoy life? Who of our youth would say, no, I want to go through life and pain and misery and suffering and heartache? You know, nobody would. No, you want to enjoy life. Do you want long life and happiness? These are, of course, questions. Well, he's got their attention now. How do you do it? Well, then keep from speaking evil and don't tell lies. Isn't that one of the first things we teach our little toddlers? Don't lie to mommy and daddy now. We teach them that basic concept. Don't lie. Don't say bad things. Don't speak evil. That's a fundamental concept that a two-year-old can learn. And that's how David began telling them, you want long life and happiness? Learn to tell the truth. And he goes on, turn away from evil. Do good things. We want our children to learn to do good things. Help your brother and sister. Help daddy with the chores or whatever it might be. Help them. Turn away from evil. Do good. Strive for peace with all your heart. Now, that's sometimes hard in a family, especially if you've got an older sister. I know. You know? But we're not to have conflict and argument and bickering in the house. Our children are told they need to strive for peace with all your heart. It's hard to do. And then he goes on, he's starting to give some benefits of doing this. The Lord watches over the righteous. He listens to their cries. Your children ever cry themselves to sleep at night? Yeah, they do. You can tell them, mommy and daddy might not understand how you feel. God does. Talk to God about it. He opposes those who do evil, so that when they die, they're soon forgotten. Verse 17, the righteous call to the Lord, he listens. If anybody will, he will. And he rescues them from all their troubles. Sometimes, you know, especially getting into the teenage years, we have troubles. Things just aren't working out well. Well, do you believe it? It says God rescues them from all their trouble. The Lord is near to those who are discouraged. We ever get discouraged? He saves those who have lost all their hope. These are powerful words. And you know, sometimes our kids get into situations like that. Do you ever read about, I hate to bring it up, teenage suicide? Some of our teens get into the place where they've lost all hope. Our teens can go there. I knew a teen that shot his own head off. You know, they can lose hope. We've got to be careful of that, parents, mindful of that. The Lord is near to those who are discouraged. He saves those who've lost all hope. So turn to him. Good people suffer many troubles, but the Lord saves them from them all. These are concepts David wanted to get across to the kids. We should get them across to our children. We want them to hear this. We want them to believe it. We want them to heed it, to do it. We want our children to be successful. We want them to have a good relationship with God. We want them to have a good relationship with this church. To say, I belong here. People love me here. I have a role to play here. This is important to me. This is not just mom and dad's church. I fit in here. We want them to have that. We want them to receive the blessings of this way of life. Today we're asking the questions about exactly what we need to do to help promote that, how to bring this along. So if we were to consider the most important thing that we can do to promote that, what might that be? I'm not going to have a quiz on it, but I'm actually going to tell you the answer. You know where this question is asked, and you know where it's answered? Life, Hope, and Truth. There are so much to learn there, so many resources, so much knowledge there that we can just search for it. We go there and answer the questions. Some person in particular writes to me a lot on email, and he'll say, can you explain da-da-da? And I'll say, well, there's a really good article on Life, Hope, and Truth about that. All you have to do is search, and there's like 3 or 4 articles about that. And he says, you know, Mr. Kelly, I keep forgetting. You keep reminding me that it's there, but it is a good resource. I'm going to go check that out. There's so much there. So the question, what is the most important thing a parent can teach? Quote, in Ephesians 6, verse 4, we read, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, lest they become discouraged. And Colossians 3:21 adds, but bring them up in the training or nurture and admonition of the Lord. You know, the Apostle Paul packs a lot into this short instruction to parents. First, he gives a warning not to be unreasonable, severe, or demeaning, not to dishearten them, but rather to encourage them. Bring them up. It's the same Greek word translated nourishes in Ephesians 5:29, where Paul points out how much we should nourish and cherish our own bodies. It is natural that parents should lovingly feed their children's bodies and minds. What is the main subject, then, of all the training and all the admonition? Here's our answer. It is the way of the Lord. That is the most important thing a parent can teach. We teach them how to obey God, how to fear Him, how to please Him, how to become like Him. Why? Because children are an inheritance from the Lord. He gives them to us to raise, but they are really His. We must learn the way of the Lord ourselves in order to teach it. Thankfully, it's laid out for us in the book, the Holy Bible. As your child sees you living out your faith, that's so important. As your child sees you living out your faith, he or she will learn how reverence of God leads to wise choices and to blessings. They will see obeying God's laws brings benefits now and forever. That's the end of the quote. I think that's one of the best things that we can do for our children. We set the example of loving God's way so much that for us, we don't consider anything else. No other option is even on the table. I brought up that concept before when people may be having marital difficulties. You know, and one thing we've got to establish right away, first thing, is that divorce is not even an option. It's not on the table. And so I'm going to work it out. We know that we will. We know that we'll succeed. It's the same principle here. We love God's way of life so much that no matter what, no other option is even considered. They're surrounded by an environment at home that does things God's way. I can think of a couple of examples. I had that example when I was a child. When I was about 13 years old, I saw my father lose his job over the Sabbath. And he was fired. And along with another lady who started keeping the Sabbath, who worked at the same place he did. And they both were fired because they said, well, we can't have both of you gone. So they fired both. I saw that happen. I saw exactly 1 year later, Dad got his job back with back pay. I saw that. I saw God's way works. My own children saw that I lost my job. Well, wait a minute. They weren't even born yet. They weren't born yet, but they've heard the story. Okay. That I lost my job for going to the Feast of Tabernacles. And many of you have done the same things. No other option is even on the table. We would never consider any other way of life. Doesn't even come into our minds. That's what our children need to see. We have to be those sincere and genuine as we live this way of life. Because if we don't, our kids will see through hypocrisy in our lives. And that makes it far worse if we're faking. Teaching our children really comes down to some very basic principles. We don't have to know everything to be good parents. Let's go back to Life, Hope, and Truth. This is an important principle of the sermon here in this next quote that I want us to make sure that we get. The greatest laws of life are also the greatest guides to successful child rearing. Jesus said, the entire law of God can be summarized as two great commandments. We know what they are. Love God with all your heart. Love your neighbors as yourselves. Our children need to know that principle. These two great laws provide the most important framework for steering our children toward a successful, fulfilling life. And when we realize that every human being has an awesome potential, including our children, these little ones, who are in our care for just a brief period of time, then parenting takes on a whole different outlook. So what is our purpose in life? What is their future? What is their purpose? It all ties in with our relationship with God and with each other. If God is first in our lives, then He will be our go-to source for the help that we need in this most important task of parenting. God will help us create the right environment to assist our children in growing into the kind of adults that they need to be. You ever thought about asking Him about that? You know, ask God to be part of this process to help you. The Apostle Paul packs... He will help us create the environment to assist our children to grow into the kind of adults they need to be. People who love God with all their hearts and their neighbors as themselves. I think that something we just read there is one of the greatest keys we have to keeping our children engaged and interested in church. Engaged and interested in learning about God. Engaged and interested in having their own personal relationship with God. And what we talked about is our children need to be taught exactly what their potential is, what their future is, what's the purpose of life. They need to understand their future is to become literal children of God with the powers of God to live like God forever. Now that's a concept that's hard to understand for us to understand. That's a concept that's hard for our children to understand. But you know who our children like to watch? They watch them on cartoons and then, what's one of the highest rated movies ever? You know, the Batman series? Superman? Faster than a speeding bullet? You can stop a train, right? Nothing. To God. How much greater is God than the fantasy superheroes that they look to? They're nothing. What can they be like? You talk to your child, you say, one day you're going to fly. One day you're going to explore the universe. Really? Can't wait. Is that real to them? Or is that make-believe? If they'll only grasp that, those concepts of what God is offering to them, they grasp it, they believe it, as Romans 8 says, nothing else compares. How could anything compare to that? Nothing this world has to offer compares to the glory that's going to be revealed in you, son, daughter. I think one of the greatest examples of someone learning that lesson that we can talk about was Moses. Think about it. Moses could have had everything the kingdom of Egypt had to offer. Moses was in the position of knowing in advance the winning numbers for that lottery, $1.6 billion, he knew it. He was going to play it. He would win. By the way, the only ticket. He he gets the entire $1.6 billion. Or, I don't know, he inherits Donald Trump's billions. I don't know. He had everything. Moses did. He could have been Pharaoh, right? But he chose something else. He chose it. Hebrews 11. He's in the faith chapter. You know, it's good to teach our children these stories. Certainly in the Exodus, it's filled with stories that we can teach with them. The entire episode from going into slavery all the way through the Exodus and the story of Joshua going into the promised land. Hebrews 11:24, by faith Moses, when he became of age, what was his age? I don't know, 17, 19? But at some point, Moses decided he had to choose. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. You know what that meant? He refused to become Pharaoh. He had that opportunity. He was king of Egypt, could have been. He was raised, you remember, you know the story. Why? How did he make that decision? Choosing, rather, to suffer affliction. He chose pain over being king of Egypt. How's that possible? What did he see that we don't see? Can we talk to our young people about that? What did Moses see that made him be able to do that? To choose, suffer affliction with the people of God, rather to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. You know, we look out at the world, oh, look at the world has to offer. Look what Moses had. The pleasures, you know, he could have had anything he wanted. You let your mind go wild. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Why? He looked to the reward. You know what? He knew the reward. He saw it. How did he see it? I don't know. Did Mr. and Mrs., you know, what his parents, did they teach him when he was little and he remembered it? How it was revealed to him, how he knew what that reward was, that's not the point. The point is, he did know and he did choose. So, to repeat, our mission, our job is to make right here, the church environment right here that our children are in, so important to our youth that they will never, ever consider leaving. Never consider leaving the safety that's here, the comfort, the support of the church. How do we do that? How can we improve? The church has given us some tools. It's making some things available. I hope some of you were able to watch last night the Friday Night Live with Mr. Myers. He gave a presentation on the EEI, Encourage, Equip, and Inspire manual. Many of us received that at the Feast of Tabernacles. It is online as well. You can see it, you can get to it online and download it, the entire manual online. I want to read from the introduction of the EEI manual. It says this, quote, clearly, we parents are not meant to discourage, but rather encourage our children as they grow in the faith. To teach our children how to do this, God gives us the perfect textbook, replete with wisdom, profitable for any situation. Yes, civilizations and technologies will change, but human nature and how to interact does not. Studying this textbook regularly builds our hope and faith in God's plan, once again, that's brought out, for each one of us individually and for all of humanity, thereby inspiring us. This manual is also designed to encourage, equip, and inspire you, the parent. Parenting is a beautifully rewarding full-time job, at times fraught with challenges. We hope this manual will aid you in your endeavors and point you regularly back to the Scriptures as a never-ending source of encouragement and inspiration. For those who have seen the manual, I hope that you realize what a tremendous blessing and benefit it is to have at our disposal a teaching tool such as that. If you haven't seen it, you can link to it from Life, Hope, and Truth and see that on the website. But again, we all have the responsibility, I believe, to pass the truth along to the next generations. The church has seen that as their responsibility for decades now. We have to teach others this way of life. Back to Mr. Armstrong, he saw the need to pass along this information and the truths of God that he had learned. When was it? Back in the 1940s, he decided, listen, there's too many people in the church now, and they're coming from far away. We need ministers. We need people in these other areas to teach them. How are we going to do that? How are we going to train and provide ministers? And the concept of Ambassador College came about. When was it? 1948, I believe. So he saw the need to train the ministry and establish a college. Looking back today, we see now the value and the wisdom of doing that. Many of our pastors are from that time, were trained there. Today we're much smaller. The concept is still there, nonetheless. Remember that Paul commissioned Timothy in 2 Timothy 2:1. He said, commit these things to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. We have to be able to learn these truths and to pass them along to the next generation. Okay? We've got a responsibility to replace ourselves. You ever notice how old the pastors are? I mean, you know, they're in their 70s and approaching 80, some of them. Some of them are very young, like me. But some aren't going to be around much longer. We just had two retired, and we've got more coming in the years ahead. Now, some of you might remember that around 10 years ago, Mr. Richard Pennelly, who was in ministerial services at the time, he was assigned the task of establishing a program that would help provide training for the men who were called into the ministry, who would be called into the ministry in future years. That program had a name. It was called Find, Train, and Ordain. And it's through that program that I came to be here, along with several other current pastors, went through that program. Currently, we're doing Foundation Institute program. We have that for our young people. And also, we have a newer program called the Focused Mentoring Program. About 17 men have gone through that. And there are, I believe, 8 men going through the program who've just newly been introduced to it this year. But we have to come back to some basic underlying principles. And that is that we're not going to have future leaders, future pillars in the church, unless those future leaders, as they are young people, find that spark, find that desire, that love for God's way of life, for His truth. While they're still children, that love has to be developed, ingrained into them so that it becomes part of who they are. We want them to keep that love and that desire. And I believe that one of the most important things that we can do to help keep our children engaged and interested in the church while they are young, and I'm talking about age 6, age 7, is our camp program. I'm a firm believer in our camp program. But I want to be quick to add that if you're a child and you have no interest in the camp program, that doesn't mean that we think you have no interest in church. Yes, it does. I mean, we understand that you do. Not everybody has to go to camp. I'm just saying it's a valuable tool that we should take advantage of. It does serve a very important and very helpful purpose for many of our youth. I want to quote again. This is from Mr. Jim Franks, president of CAGWA. He wrote about the camp program. I doubt if many of us saw this because, you know, we don't have kids going to camp and we maybe just didn't even realize this was there. But it's on the camp webpage. He wrote, last year our theme was the narrow way. Accept the challenge. We wanted our young people to realize that life requires choices and that those choices have repercussions. Jesus Christ referred to two life choices, the broad way chosen by the majority or the narrow way chosen by only a few. Christ summarized those choices in Matthew 7, verse 13, where we read, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, difficult is the way that leads to life, and there are few who find it. It will always be a challenge to go against the majority. But it is that challenge that helps us develop the character that we will need to be in God's family. And so our camps serve a dual purpose for the youth, to help them understand their value to God, and to help them develop the character to achieve eternal life. If we hold to the right principles, we can know God will be with us. Each year we do our best to give those lessons to our youth. Those who serve also benefit. It's a two-way street. The more you give, the more you receive. This year, and now, of course, in 2016, this is last year, our theme is the pearl of great price. Find it and keep it. This will be used in all of our camps for 2015. We anticipate that, once again, more than 1,000 people will participate, either as a camper or a staff member. The 1,000 number represents close to 20% of our U.S. church membership, and I realize that many of those who cannot make it to camp each year, they are still enthusiastic supporters of the camp program. That's the end of the quote. Again, I have experienced that. I personally spent 3 years at the pre-teen camp at Camp Chattahoochee. Some of you have been there. A year before that, I spent a teen camp. But I learned that I work best with the little ones. I've seen the value of what our camp has to offer. Most of our kids love being there. When they're very young, and again, 6, 7 years old, they simply love being with kids their own age. They have fun. They want to go and do the activities. That's fun. But behind the scenes, what they don't realize, something else is going on in their little minds. They're learning at a very young age, God's way works. It's fun. We hope that they have such a good time that they want to come back next year and the next year. And then as teens, they keep going back to camp as well as going to the teen camp. But they're also, the teens, they begin to be counselors and workers back at the preteen camp. Sharing with them, helping the little ones there. Later, as young adults, they continue still serving as counselors and workers at the teen camps. Because for them, camp has simply become a way of life. That's part of their church culture. Again, it's not really about camp. After all, is it? It's really God's way of life that has become so important to them and where they want to be and where they can make a difference. Now, there's a new program the church is rolling out under the Foundation Outreach International Department. This was introduced a year ago, basically, and I thought it would be more prevalent by now, but it's had a slow rollout. But I know that it's coming. It's coming very soon. The program is called the Embark Program. This is a way we can help teach the younger generation God's ways, even though we don't have children. We can be a guide. Mr. Dean, we can be a mentor for them. I so appreciate the words that you had in the sermonette today. I had no idea I was going to talk about that. But mentoring, you can go to the website now through Foundation Outreach International, find a lot of information about the program. Again, I want to describe it for you and quote some of the information on the website that helps us understand its purpose. It says, help for high school seniors, college students, and anyone starting their first few careers who want a personal travel guide to take them on 7 journeys of travel to explore a world of ideas and advice built just for them. From thought-provoking leaders and cool programs at top universities, corporations, business consultants, and life coaches, through a totally free program of awesome, personalized success training for work, family, and life. Embark targets high school seniors, college students, and anyone starting their career. To be able to implement the program curriculum, travelers, our young people, will typically need to be old enough to drive, to meet and talk with people alone in public settings, and be able to implement the service and travel elements of the program. Of course, other travelers are welcome too, but our focus is primarily on our younger people. Travelers will be required to participate in 7 phone calls with their travel guides, their mentor, that will last approximately an hour each. Additional time may be required to complete each assigned journey, which may take numerous hours over the course of a month. But the Embark program typically takes about 6 months to complete, though we encourage travelers to proceed at their own agreed-upon pace with their travel guide. Some travel itineraries, and you see the theme that they're using as they promote this, travelers, and you have a guide or an itinerary, will take longer than others. Our director of travel guides will check in with our travel guides initially and at 6 months. We have designed this program to be the mentor, not our travel guides. They are to represent Embark and to guide the young travelers through the program. That's the end of the quote. Why I'm pointing these things out to you and talking with you about them today is that I want you to see how the church continues to focus on and to understand and to realize the responsibility that we have a mission, that we are to turn the hearts of the children to their fathers, the fathers to the children. Again, I know that we have people here right in our Hickory congregation who can function in the role of these travel guides and provide an invaluable service to our young people. Continuing, the church, still, we provide additional opportunities for our young adults by offering Foundation Institute, a 9-month study of a 9-month program of intensive study of God's Word. Now, we're going to be watching a video on that. It'll be next week or the week after, but soon. We watched it in Greensboro this morning. If you went to Winter Family Weekend, the video was introduced there, but we're going to see it here as well. But again, I wonder if we realize just how valuable Foundation Institute is. Once again, permit me, from the FI website. Foundation Institute is a 9-month academic program founded on the belief that the Bible is the Word of God and the foundation of knowledge. The Bible answers all the big questions of life, such as who is God and why did He create the world? What is the purpose of life? You see, we start asking these questions from a young age, but we continue. They have to continue that because it's got to be in their heart. Continuing, and reveals the path to a happy, fulfilling, and successful life. Unfortunately, the foundational knowledge of the Bible is missing in modern education. Higher education seeks to help students learn how to make a living, but not how to live. Does that sound familiar to some of those older folks? We heard that about Ambassador College. Foundation Institute seeks to fill this gap. Through teaching the eternal truths and the values of the Bible in a systematic way, Foundation Institute equips students with an understanding of the Bible and how it applies to life in the 21st century. The core of the 9-month program is a dynamic, in-depth study of the Bible, coupled with discussion of how to incorporate its many truths into our daily lives. Students develop strong relationships with other students, participate in many activities outside the classroom, and also have many opportunities to serve in the headquarters office. That's the end of the quote. I would hope that our young people would grow up through their teenage years looking forward to their opportunity to go there, to participate in something like this. I can remember back in the 1960s, I thought, well, someday I'm going to have the opportunity to go to Ambassador College. And it is just what you did. Well, I hope that that's what our young people are looking forward today, that I can go to FI. It's a priceless opportunity provided. And we have one other tool I mentioned in the announcements, and I'll just mention it in passing here for our young adults. Again, showing you that the church wants to be involved. We want to help. We want to provide resources. And that's the Young Adult Leadership Weekends that are made possible for them. I hope we see the fruits of those programs and have come to value them. All right, we've covered a lot of aspects today already of what the church is doing, how we as the church as a whole, how we feel we have to implement the mandate of turning the hearts of the children to the fathers and the fathers to the children. But I want us to go back into the book of Psalms, David again, get just a little bit more instruction from the Bible as we begin to wrap this up. Psalm 78, verse 1. You'll recognize these words in a minute from the hymn that we sing. I don't know whether it's in our current hymnal or not. I didn't look that up. But our old timers will recognize these words. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. And I will open my mouth in a parable, and I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have taught us. Our fathers have told us. Hopefully, we're telling our children, the fathers are telling the children these things of old. Verse 4, we will not hide them from their children. We will tell to the children, to the generation to come, the praises of the Lord. Do we do that? Do we take opportunity to do that? And His strength, and His wonderful works that He has done. Again, we need to tell our children. They need to know the stories. They need to hear the stories of how God's intervened in our lives in the past. What He did way back in 1998 or whatever, year you might want to say. Talk to them how God's intervened in your life. The wonderful works He has done. For He established a testimony in Jacob. Could we say the church? and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they, our fathers, should make them known to their children. That was a commandment to make these things known to the children, so that the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born, that they might arise and declare them to their children. Again, the process is to go on from generation to generation, that they may set their hope in God, not in the things of this world, but they set their hope in God, and that they don't forget the works of God, because they've been told the works of God over and over again, but keep his commandments, and they not be like their fathers, or before, you know, they were in the church, a stubborn and rebellious generation, then a generation that didn't set its heart right and whose spirit was not faithful to God. That speaks of our responsibility. We have to make God's law known to our children. It becomes a heritage. It becomes their inheritance. We want to pass that along to them. It has to be passed from generation to generation. What better inheritance could we possibly give our children than a love, a desire, a knowledge of this way of life and their future and their potential? What greater gift could they possibly have? Where's all this brought us today? What conclusions have we reached? Have we reached one? We love our children. We want the very best for them. We believe the Bible provides the answers. We believe the Bible tells our children how to have the very best that life has to offer. We believe in the instruction that we are to raise them in the training and the admonition of the Lord. We accept that. We believe that. It's how. We've also seen that this church has a strong desire and a commitment to helping you, the parents. We, the church, want to be involved. We want to help you. The church provides various learning tools, various opportunities for your children. It's designed for them, to help them. We also believe each member can have a positive influence on the youth who attend services right here with us. So again, let's summarize some ways that we can do that as a congregation. We talked about it last year. When we talk about getting to know one another better in the congregation, as we have been talking about that, that doesn't just apply peer to peer. That applies to our older folks knowing the younger, and the younger knowing the older. You can be like aunts and uncles. You can be grandparents to the youth of the congregation. You can invite families with young children to your home. You can develop a relationship with them, know their names, know where they go to school, know what they do, what their hobbies are, what they like. You never know when you're going to make an influence on them, an impact on them, and they might someday want to sit down and say, "Can we talk? I have something I'd like to ask you about." Here's another comment taken from my sermon from a year ago. Some of the senior citizens here today, or others who are a part of our congregation, who may not have been able to be with us here today, don't have all that much more time. Old age and disease will take their toll, and they won't be here a few years from now. We can think of the empty seat on the front row. We will miss them, as I miss many of the elderly men and women who taught me in my youth. But today, it's not too late for you to listen to them, to learn from them. It's not too late for them to be able to sit down and talk with you and to get to know you, to get to love you, teenagers and preteens. Because, look, they're still right here, sitting among us, ready and anxious to share with you some of their most treasured memories and their values of life. They want to encourage you. They want to help you. They want to motivate you. They want to help you have a better relationship with God, just like they've learned to do. Job 12 tells us in verse 12, "Wisdom is with aged men," and I would say women as well, of course, "and with length of days comes understanding. With him are wisdom and strength. He has counsel. He has understanding." Do our young people know that? Do they realize what a wealth, a treasure of information and knowledge and encouragement that our elderly have to give to them if they'll just seek it? One final point I want to get across today is that we should help our young people capture the vision. I talked about it a little bit earlier already. Capture the vision that we as adults have, hopefully we all have. Think about this. Our children love going to the Feast of Tabernacles, don't they? Look forward to it all year long. Why? I hope it's not just because I get to have fun with my friends, or I get to go to a cool place, I get to go to the beach, or I get feast gifts. That has its part, but that's not why we go to the feast. The feast is our best opportunity of the year to emphasize just how wonderful the world tomorrow is going to be. Do not neglect to teach your children about the wonders of the kingdom of God, the world tomorrow. Our youth, our young people must know without any doubt that outside these walls, out there, that's Satan's world, and it's filled with lies and deception, and it's going to lead you to destruction and to death. It is a snare. It is a trap. It looks wonderful. It looks like glittering gold. It will destroy you. They have to know that. You have to teach them that. Our youth, our children, have to know without any doubt, they know they have been chosen by God for a special responsibility, a special purpose, perhaps as the future physical leaders in the world tomorrow. Eventually, they also becoming spirit beings, God beings. We've got to talk about that more. It has to be in their heart. Help them know what it will be like to be like God. That's why we talked about that in last week's sermon. They have to know there are only two choices ultimately exist. Life or death. Choose. God has called them along with you to understand that path to eternal life now. We all as a church then have a responsibility to help our youth understand their calling, understand their role in the plan of God as we talk about the plan of God. You see, our youth see the world. They see it more often than we do. They're out in it. They're exposed to it. It's very, very attractive to them, just like it was to you at one time. But this world is growing darker every day. They have to come to see the world for the evil that it is. You've got to help them. Explain to them about the deception of Satan. Explain to your children that he's tricking them into giving up. Give up, church. Follow the world. Follow me to death. But you, on the other hand, you paint a realistic picture of the wonders of the millennium and their part in bringing that about. Talk to them about what it will be like King David did, to live in a palace in Jerusalem. Isaiah 61 and verse 9 says, speaking of the world tomorrow, their offspring, our offspring, will be known among the nations and their descendants among the people. Everyone who sees them will recognize these are the descendants whom the Lord has blessed. This will be our children. They need to understand their future. When our son Scott was just a little boy and we tuck him in at night, I still remember what the bedroom looked like. We would often tell him a story, and one of the stories, we often told him about what it would be like living in the millennium. Of course, we thought it would be here long ago. One night, we asked him, Nancy and I, what he wanted for a bedtime story tonight, and he said, Dad, he said, tell me about the world tomorrow, the Jerusalem part. And we never forgot that. He hasn't either, because we remind him of it from time to time. He's almost 40 years old now. The last word of the sermon today is not for you adults, it's for the young people here. I spent most of my sermon today explaining to our congregation how they can best help you to succeed. And how that everyone here, the entire church, is working to help you succeed. But young people, you've got a responsibility too. When I gave the teen Bible study at the Feast of Tabernacles over the past 2 years, what an opportunity and blessing that was. Here were my concluding words to them, and they will be my concluding words to you today. Young people, talk to God. Read and study the Bible. Become righteous in your conduct. Talk to your parents. Talk to your pastor. Talk to the elderly. Participate in camps. Raise your personal bar. Walk the narrow way. Appreciate the pearl of great price. Build a strong foundation. Become aware of the world around you as you begin to understand world events and Bible prophecy. Talk about the world tomorrow. Read about it. Study it. Prepare to live in it. Prepare to govern in it. Because young people, the future is yours as an inheritance. And we're here to help you do all these things to eventually inherit the kingdom of God.